Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on Newstalk.
The Brits have spoken and the Tories have been unceremoniously dumped out of office. The French will speak again on Sunday and Macron's grip on power could be in danger. And Joe Biden might soon give up hope of a second term in office in America. Three G7 nations and three of the top seven economies in the world. Because of the importance of these three countries, we have two heavyweight guests ourselves who are regulars on the show. Russ Mould from AJ Bell and Michael O'Sullivan, author of The Levelling and co-founder of Unio Wealth Managers. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning,
Joe. Now, can I start with Russ, since we are focusing on the UK election, a lot of people waking up to the results that Labour are safe, home and hosed with a landslide. How significant do you think that this election result will be, Russ, for the UK economy and UK trade, etc.?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Labour's manifesto, they played it pretty safe. And in many ways, there isn't a huge amount to distinguish themselves from the Conservatives on issues such as tax. And they tied themselves in knots trying to prove to the public, the British public, that they were able to fund an extra £28 billion of spending or so. And that's barely 1% of GDP. So it's not a huge number. So they are slightly boxed in by the weak state of the British national finances, where we've got a debt to GDP ratio of more than 90% and a budget deficit. They're slightly boxed in by their own promises on tax. So in some ways, you might not see that there's a huge change coming. Equally, they've got a massive Westminster majority, and it'll be interesting to see if now that they're able to turn that into a mandate after what you could say is basically 15 years of austerity, for want of a better word, whether there is public appetite for a more sort of state-led reflationary policy or not. But equally, if you're being picky, you'd say that maybe they don't have that mandate because they've actually won a lesser percentage of the share of the votes than Jeremy Corbyn did in 2017.
Yeah, that was surprising, wasn't it? But that's the UK electoral system, which we regard as slightly unfair. Now, the target is to grow GDP. Keir Starmer has been really clear, growth, growth, growth. But the low-hanging fruit to achieve that, surely, would be to rejoin the customs union or maybe even the single market. They absolutely ruled those out. They put them as red lines. Is that a lack of political courage, would you say, Russ?
Sir Keir said he doesn't expect the UK to return to the European Union in his lifetime. And he's not that old. No, he's not at all. So, I mean, you're talking, you know, a long time there. I think one of the things that surprised me personally and a lot of people about the election campaign was just that Brexit just wasn't discussed. I think it was such a divisive issue in 2016 when the result first came out, 52-48 to leave. It was so divisive in 2019 in the election that Boris Johnson won that I don't think any politician really wanted to reopen those wounds and go back there. And I think from a Labour perspective, they just wanted to keep their head down and let the incumbent Conservative Party, you know, kind of tear itself to pieces with infighting, which it did a pretty good job of doing. So I think financial markets have never really recovered from Brexit in that if you look at the pound, it's never recaptured the ground it lost against the euro or the dollar, although it's nearing a 2.5-year high against the euro now. So international markets have been slightly wary of holding British sterling-denominated assets ever since. Trade, economists will show you that, you know, trade has not really grown as expected. The economy has not matched growth that we've seen in, say, Europe or America since the pandemic, with Brexit a big role in that. But I just don't think at the moment there's a huge amount of political will to readdress that issue.
Mike O'Sullivan from Unio, do you want to come in there on that story of the low-hanging fruit that was avoided?
I do. Good morning, Ross. Good morning, Joe. I think Starmer has been incredibly careful not to to scare the horses, as it were, on Europe, on the economy. I think Labour will be very careful in what they do in the economy in the first year. I think they're keen for foreign direct investment. The one area I do expect to see action is that the UK, like France, has got a massive debt load, which will constrain government spending. And I think Labour want to launch something called the National Wealth Fund, which is a sort of a sovereign wealth fund. They want to launch GB Energy. to basically to get the private sector to help the state build green energy infrastructure, technology infrastructure in other parts of the economy. So I think this is going to be a very interesting trend from an economic point of view, is the potential for big investment funds, big pension funds to work with the government in some of these new tech areas where of course, Ross is an expert.
Mike, can I come to you about the French second round voting this Sunday? There's been a lot of horse trading to try and minimise the power in the French Parliament of the far right, Rassemblement National.
So, Joe, just as Britain is about to enjoy a period of calm, my impression is that the contagion of chaos, if you like, is moving to France. There's a lot of resentment against President Macron for giving the French people a choice, effectively, they didn't want to take. He's effectively evacuated the centre of French politics. Much of his party has been wiped out. The Republicans are also under pressure. And you now have these two extremes, this coalition on the left and then the Rassemblement National. And the likely scenario is that the Rassemblement will probably get 240, 250 seats, I think, which will not be enough to have a majority. The fact that they're close is in itself a huge new negative development. And then you have this rancorous coalition, which is also incoherent in its policies on the left. So we're probably going to have a technocratic government on which the French constitution is not clear. And that will probably endure for about a year until there can be another election. And I think there's a whole range of implications, not clearly just for France, but for Europe and for Ireland. I think Macron as a political force is effectively finished. Wow. And that's important because he was the leading agitator on key issues from Ukraine to NATO to European policy. And we will see other countries, be it Donald Tusk in Poland, take the lead there. Ursula von der Leyen, I think, is definitely strengthened here. So I think it weakens France for sure in terms of its prestige. And I think the fact that we will have this government of technocrats most likely won't satisfy any French people.
Okay. Let's bring back in Russ Mould on what your thoughts are on this French malaise going on, what it'll mean for the bond markets, what it'll mean for European investment. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's been weighing on the French stock market. It's been weighing on the yield, driving up the yields on French government bonds, because there's a fear that if you did get a Rassemblement National win, that there would be a bit of a spending spree, which would further put pressure on the French national debt and the French balance sheet. And again, frightened bond vigilantes, and they would then demand a higher return to lend money to the French government. So I think there are some nerves there. I know one or two people have been arguing that Monsieur Macron's actually been quite Machiavellian, in that he's got 3 or 4 years of his second term to run. If there is, you end up with a hung parliament, he can maybe sweep back in a year's time and say, look, you really do need me, ladies and gentlemen, because absolutely nothing's happened in the meantime. But that may be giving him a little bit too much credit.
Yes. Back to you, Mike. Do you think that this will change much for Franco-Irish relations?
Yeah, just on the Machiavellian element, I think Macron has made a mistake. He's more like, it's more like something Rishi Sunak or David Cameron have done in the past, and that there's no positive outcome in this at all. On Franco-Irish relations, France and Ireland have become increasingly close. There's been more solidarity since Brexit. And I think the government, the next government in France, will be so focused on domestic affairs as to not really look much beyond France. So it's not so much that relations will deteriorate, but that there'll be so many other things going on in France. I think also there's a lot of lessons in this for Ireland. We have one of the best democracies in the world, and we have to nurture it.
French, one of the slowest as well, Mike.
I don't think so. I think that the public debate in Ireland is maybe misplaced in this. And I think if you look at other countries, we don't realize how good our democratic system is. And I think it's not a bad thing that it's slow, and it's probably slightly less dominated by social media than other countries. And I think in France, there is a big issue that many people feel very far from the state and very far from democracy, and there's a lack of trust. And then also on the whole socioeconomic front, there's lots of things that are happening, not just in France, but across Europe, that are beginning to creep into Ireland, the rise of extreme politics, etc., that we have to be, I think, more alert to and maybe more structured in our thinking. And then finally, I think in Europe, the leadership, the political momentum in Europe, I think, will move away from Paris, more towards Brussels, towards the new executive, people like Catherine Kallas, the new foreign commissioner, and also I think towards the Baltic states and Poland, all of whom are very pro-European, and all of whom are very, very preoccupied with what's happening with Russia and Ukraine.
Okay, well, let's finally turn to the United States. Russ, there is a big chance that Joe Biden won't stand for election in November. Some people think it might be in the next week or two that he might even announce he's standing down. What does that mean for the U.S. economy? I.e., what could we expect from a Donald Trump presidency? What would change in macroeconomic terms? Joe Biden, of course, introduced the Inflation Reduction Act, which has been a huge investment driver into the United States in terms of renewable energy sources and all that stuff. Do you think another Donald Trump victory would change the trajectory of the U.S. economy?
It could. I mean, just on the Biden situation, Abigail Disney, the sign of the Disney family and a huge Democratic Party donor, did say overnight that she would not give any further dollars to the Democratic Party until President Biden stood down. So the pressure is building. In terms of what a Trump presidency would make, if you listen to that first debate when they weren't arguing over who was the better golfer, Trump's main policies were extending the tax cuts that he put through in 2017, which will further increase the American budget deficit but stimulate the economy, limiting immigration, and putting tariffs on virtually all imports, even European ones, but much bigger ones on China. And all three of those, to me, feel inherently inflationary. So you might get a boost to the economy, but they do all feel very inflationary, which is a tricky balancing act because, yes, you need growth, and I can see the merits of onshoring and so on, but America can't afford, is struggling to afford its debts now. The federal interest bill is over $1 trillion a year on an annualized basis. If inflation takes hold and government and bond yields and interest rates go up higher, that is going to put an enormous amount of pressure on American finances. So it's a very, very delicate situation.
And Mike, finally with you, a Donald Trump presidency with all those tariffs, it might also demand the reshoring of all the American companies, a lot of whom are based here.
I don't think so. I think the American companies in Ireland would be considered to be friend-shoring. And I think many of them would rebut strongly his demand that they come back to the States because they may not find the same labor and market access that they have in Ireland to Europe. Just to go quickly, Joe, back to Ross's point, interesting, all the three countries we've spoken about this morning all have massive debt loads, 100% debt to GDP. They have no fiscal space, and populists love and need fiscal space. So there are building crises in France and America, certainly, where you have these populist politicians who want to cut taxes, want to spend money, but they're right up at the limit of deficits. In France, the deficit is 6%. And I think we're going to see a contest, not so much between the left and right, but between bond markets and the populists into next year.
Okay, well, thank you both.
Breakfast Business
with Enterprise Ireland
on News Talk.